Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hello there. I am confused, and this is PWT Talks NXT for March 22nd, 2022. Now, why the heck am I so confused? Well, we'll get there in just a few minutes, folks. I'm Nate Lindberg, and you can follow me on Twitter at Nate Lindberg. I write the NXT hits and misses, which I do have up on pwtorch.com for you guys to check out if you'd like to do so. And here with me to talk about what just happened on NXT tonight is Mr. Tom Stout.
You mean I get an entrance? Well, I'm doing better than most wrestlers on NXT tonight then. I am at Tom Stout, and don't worry, guys. I'll give you a break from me being the live co-host on Torch Audio real soon. But here we go with day number three in a row.
Three in a row. Now, okay, if you were to have an entrance, what would your entrance music be?
Okay, I could give a long, drawn-out answer that goes back to, like, creator wrestler days when the Xbox started allowing you to actually upload your own music onto it. But I will instead – yeah, right? I don't know. I don't have new gen, so I haven't bought a wrestling game since the 2K13. Anyway, I will use the opportunity to plug the unsolicited plug for the Blake and Sal show, because they give their guests entrance music, and I always come out to what is now Damian Priest's old theme.
Oh, heck yeah. All right, there we go. You know, it's funny, because as you were talking, I wasn't even thinking about what mine was going to be. So we're going to just move right on.
Oh, see? Okay. I was like, okay, Nate's going to tell me his now, right? But
no. Yeah, right. I got nothing off the top of my head. But anyway,
that's because you're a man, such a man.
Okay, that's not how I thought this show was going to start, guys. We're off the rails, and we're what, maybe 2 minutes into the show? Now, maybe I'm just so confused. It just happened in our main event. We had our Dusty Classic final between Wendy Chu and Dakota Kai, which was weird enough in the first place that Wendy Chu actually made it to the finals of the Dusty Cup. But she did, versus Kaylee Ray and Io Shirai. And we ended up seeing a pretty fun contest, if I'm not going to lie. Even Wendy Chu kind of, I don't want to say grew on me in the match, but I didn't hate her wrestling in the match. Not that I normally do. I like Karen Q. But regardless of all of that, after they won, they being Dakota Kai and Kaylee Ray, Toxic Attraction come down to the ring, and Kaylee Ray and Io Shirai essentially say that they're not going to cash in their NXT tag title opportunity for winning the Dusty Cup, but instead they're going to turn the women's match, the NXT women's title match at Stand and Deliver into a fatal four-way. And I mean, okay, I kind of like the idea. I'm assuming the fatal four-way involves Cora Jade, but who the heck made that an acceptable stipulation, and who gave them the authority to just change the main events of the women's title picture? I mean, granted, nobody was there to actually make it official, right? But I'm assuming it's official because they talked. Tom, help me out. What just happened?
Yeah, this is where you would have needed somebody who is a man, such a man, to either come out or to have a little meeting in his office earlier where you're like, huh, I wonder what that was about. So when they say it later, you're like, all right, well, at least I can go along with that. They've gotten cute with how the fallout from the Dusty plays before, but they've never gotten this cute. This is so cute that it's like, why even bother with a tag tournament in the first place?
Right.
The whole story was, how are these teams going to get along? Are Io and Kaylee more individuals that are interested in their singles careers and they're just thrown together so they can try to add another accolade? And then they just decided, I mean, you know, you put your booking hat on and you can sort of translate what they said into being like, we don't want the tag team championships. We don't want to win the tag team championships, because that's what would happen if we faced JC and Gigi. We would actually rather lose an opportunity to win the singles championship because Mandy's just going to retain. And Cora Jade comes out and she's all like, yeah, that's right. We good guys are going to take you down. Or she doesn't say anything, but she's standing there with them. And I'm like, if I was Cora Jade, I'd be real pissed off that these two just horned in on my territory when I had a singles match. So yeah, I can't defend this at all. In regards to the match itself, it was pretty fun, pretty darn good. There was one incredibly janky spot, which ended up being the one that they replayed over and over again, where Wendy had to roll Kaylee before making honestly, it was a believable finish. She did a splash off the top, and I was sitting there going, oh, wow, they're actually going to have them win this. That's unexpected. And then she takes the time to roll Kaylee further toward the center of the ring. And I'm like, well, what are you doing? What are you getting in position for? And then, of course, Io comes flying across the ring, kicks Dakota into Wendy, who doesn't really move off of the cover. So it's one of those things where Kaylee just, you know, kicks out, even though the leverage on top of her didn't really shift. So that was a very unfortunate moment that they then showed back to us several more times. But even when Wendy used, and, you know, I've said everything I've said about Mandy in this, Mandy's name crossed my eyes when I was looking at my notes just now, but I've said everything that I've said about Wendy, and the same still applies. But I did find myself chuckling aloud in the right way, in the intended way, I should say, at the pillow spot, which I understand wanting officials to follow the spirit of the law when it comes to enforcing rules in a match, because if it's really not that much of an interference, it would be better to let things continue so we can have a result. But as a viewer, I always find myself wishing for the letter of the law and feeling like when somebody interferes in a match, or intends to interfere in a match, but they only steal focus from the babyface, and the babyface gets a bunch of offense in on them, I'm like, well, it was still interference. It still affected the course of the match. So when a pillow is used to defend Dakota Kai from whatever attack was incoming, I think a kick from Io or something, I still feel like technically that's a foreign object that shouldn't be allowed. You know, this isn't a D'Lo's chest protector situation here. So, I'll say something positive in that with Wendy taking the fall, which I think anybody would have predicted was going to happen here. I am curious with how they've handled this tag tournament with Wendy and Dakota in particular, how the two of them are going to move forward with one another. And thankfully they reminded us of where Dakota stands with all of that, with that backstage interview, which I thought was, you know, one of the like sleeper nice moments of the show, where they reminded us of the characterization that's going into their side of the storyline here, and how Dakota accepting Wendy as a friend when her whole thing was, I hate friends now, is potentially tenuous if they don't continue to succeed together.
You know, that mute button is my worst enemy on this show. anyway, I've never actually wanted you to, like, I really wanted you to say, Nate, no, you missed this. Like, there was something that I missed, and that explained why everything happened the way it happened after in the post-show angle. Everything you said was exactly what I was thinking. I mean, first, why have a tag tournament in the first place if you're not going to pay it off with a tag match with the champions? It just devalued the entire thing.
The tag champs aren't even on the card anymore now.
Right? Like, that just took the tag. I mean, unless something happens next week, but we've already got a pretty stacked card already for Stand and Deliver. So there's that. Cora Jade, like you said, she's coming out like to help out, you know, Kaylee Ray and Io Shirai. Like she's this, you know, valiant white knight type. And, but yeah, she should be pissed off. Like she just went from having, you know, 1 in 2 odds of winning to now 1 in 4 odds of winning.
Oh no, here we go.
I'm not going into Nady math. Don't worry about it. We don't want to go there. The whole thing was just very, very, very confusing. The only way that I think they can even remotely try to save this is if like some severe storytelling next week, to try and figure out how this happened. And even then, like, what are they going to say? There was some clause in a contract somewhere. Like, I don't know. That's just, oh, I feel like they're just making stuff up. I guess it's wrestling. It's the whole thing. It's just making things up. But wow, yeah, weird, very weird.
Be like, well, Kaylee was holding a bat, and I didn't understand half the words she was saying. So what was I gonna do?
Right. Yeah. Right. Okay, so with that, let's let you guys lead the conversation. It'll go over to the phone lines, and we'll talk with Ryan over in Cumberland, Maryland. Ryan, what do you got for us tonight?
My first question is on Bron Breakker working with Robert Roode and Dolph Ziggler. Do you think they're working as coaches also, like giving him some pointers? And if they are, what do you think advice they're giving him?
I'm sorry. Say that one more time. Are the Bron Breakker working? Like, are they working as trainers or are they working with trainers?
Like when they're like having a match, say like tonight when Robert Roode wrestled Bron Breakker, do you think Robert Roode is giving Bron Breakker some like pointers on how to be a main roster wrestler or anything like that when they're in the ring or out of the ring?
Okay. Now I get you. I'm sorry. By far, 100%. I mean, somebody like Bobby Roode, just being such a veteran in this business as is, even though he's back down in NXT, he's got a wealth of knowledge, and I'm sure promo skills, just things in the ring. I'm not sure necessarily what they would have been talking about, or what things he would have been trying to pass down, what knowledge he would have been trying to pass down. But I would love to think that that's exactly what Bobby Roode would be doing. Tom, do you have any ideas of what Bobby Roode might try to be working on with Bron Breakker, if any?
To hazard a stab, I will say that it might be as specific as just learning to milk moments and learning when to slow down and when to hype up. But it may just also be as simple as working with someone who is such a veteran that they've got a real muscle memory for what it means to be in the ring on a very base level. And when it comes to positioning and reactions and the give and take, and communication. And so just having the experience of being in there, I think, is invaluable, especially in a repeated sense, so you can continue learning throughout a program from the same person. I definitely think that's part of the intention here. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, and I even just kind of take it to any job that you're in, whether it's, you know, wrestling or, you know, for me, I'm an IT guy. I have friends that are in IT as well that, like, I don't even necessarily work with them, but I'll bounce things off of them, or, you know, we'll work together on a problem. Not necessarily at, you know, like one company or whatever, but like, yeah, for example, you know, I had an issue at my company, bounced it off of a boss that I used to have, and he's constantly trying to give me information. I'm constantly giving him information. I've got like a network of 4 or 5 different people that, you know, we kind of always try to share information, keep each other like in the know. And I think, you know, anytime you can find a veteran's point of view in the profession that you're in, you're going to learn something. It might be something stupidly small, or it might be, you know, something that's changing, you know, like the entire way that you have a process, thought process, the way you work a move or something like that. So, again, don't know exactly what they would have been talking about, but I'm sure there was certainly a knowledge transfer of some sort. What else do you got for us, Ryan, or to follow up on that, if you have anything?
Second question is on Solo beating Roderick Strong. If he ever makes it to the main roster, do you think he'll ever become a member of the Bloodline, or do you think he'll be one of those ones that doesn't accept Driven as his tribal chief and has a feud, like a Samoan feud with him?
I kind of would like to see that, like something along those lines of, like, if, you know, him getting called up to the main roster, and if they are going to, you know, acknowledge the fact that he is a member of that family, then go ahead and, you know, acknowledge it. And, you know, he could try to, like, take down the Bloodline or something like that. If the Bloodline is even a thing by the time he gets up to the main roster. I kind of like something like that. If they're going to push him strong to be some sort of a foil for Roman. But I don't necessarily want them to do that just to do it. If they were going to bring him up and they weren't going to push him in like a pretty strong capacity to make him like a serious contender for Roman, which I don't necessarily see them doing, at least at this stage in the game, then I would probably want them to either not acknowledge the fact that he's in a, you know, part of the NOIE family, or just have them acknowledge it and then and join, you know, join the stable. Tom, your thoughts on Solo Sikoa?
Solo is working from a good baseline, and he is one of absolutely many who could just go to the main roster tomorrow and fit in just fine.
Oh, yeah.
But I think he still has a lot more he can show us, and so that's why I don't know if I want to go as far as to predict, but and I've spoken of him before as someone who could be a potential NXT champion, and that's basically what I mean here, is that I don't know if I want to go as far as to predict that at this early stage, but I hope that he stays around in NXT for a while, because I feel like there's mileage you can get out of this guy on the television brand. So I would be looking at him as someone who would be going up around the time that perhaps Roman's character, assuming he's still doing the same character, which like 2 years from now, I think that he will have remained fresh for quite a while, had the major climax that we've been building through this whole time with him versus The Rock at WrestleMania. And maybe he'll be at a point where he's in need of some freshening up, or if not a need, he could use it. And so I would suggest, and we're like so many layers deep into fantasy booking here, so take it as you will. I would suggest Sikoa going up. They would probably want to rename him. Would you want to use the Uso last name? I don't know if, yeah, could you use the, well, okay, I don't know. Whatever they do, name aside,
yeah.
I feel like he could go up as someone who's just now Roman's drone. Not exactly. There's a different wrinkle to what they're doing with Bush, but sort of a similar thing where he's just there for the fight, and Roman is using him for that, and he doesn't question Roman. So what we're doing here is yes, it's about Sikoa's introduction, and yes, it's about Roman, but it's even more about getting the Usos back into the storyline that they started from, circling back to that, and having Roman say, well, I don't need you guys anymore because you've caused problems in the past, so thanks for your services, but I've got someone who's more loyal now. And they would come up with a more sound way to deliver that than I just rambled through. But yeah, I don't know. That's what pops to mind when Ryan posed the question.
For sure. For sure. Ryan, anything else or any follow-up on all that?
I have a different topic on Wendy Chu. You think they're going to come out with, like, a orange soda because they're really pushing that, like, sort of like what they do with New Day cereal, because they're really giving her a big push and really pushing that she likes this orange soda.
I don't know. I think if the character takes off, then, I mean, all bets are on the table. You know, whether it be like an actual orange soda, or, I mean, I could see them coming up with like orange soda plushies and things like that. That's kind of like far down the road. I think that the character needs to prove itself first, and people need to, it needs to show that it's a popular character. And I'm so very torn, because tonight, like, I kind of saw a glimpse of like what this could be, and it might be able to develop into some sort of a funny comedic act. But even at that, how long, what's the longevity there? You know, even if it gets over for, you know, a cup of coffee, what, you know, just a short period of time. I don't really see any major longevity in this gimmick in its current incarnation. It would have to have some sort of an evolution, which could certainly be done. We've seen weirder evolutions. I mean, heck, look at Goldust, I guess. We've seen weirder gimmicks, but this particular one, I don't know. I haven't really been super high on until at least tonight. It's the first time that I've kind of even been able to remotely see what maybe, you know, WWE potentially sees in the character. But as far as like merch and stuff, you know, I think that's just going to kind of tell, time's going to have to tell.
Still surprised every time I go into FYE and see that New Day cereal is still a thing. The Bootios are still being sold.
I didn't even know FYE was still a thing.
Yeah.
They all closed around me. I didn't know they were still open.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah. I do enjoy browsing their collectibles. A couple of years ago, I finally got myself to a point where I realized, oh, I enjoy looking at these and not spending money on them. Like, I get the same level of enjoyment in my life out of seeing that they exist and like, oh, gee, that product sure does tickle me. And then keeping my money in my bank account and going home and not having it take up space in my living space. I finally got to that.
Priorities change.
Yeah, but I do still enjoy browsing and looking at like the $40 giant Stellan Skarsgård, Dune action figure that exists for some reason and will inevitably go on clearance because who's buying that? But anyway, I think the orange soda thing is just a Kenan and Kel reference. And last week, that's all I said about it because it just kind of came out of nowhere and didn't really mean anything. But because they're having it recur, it's one of those things that is non sequitur isn't the word. It's just, I guess it's just sort of a random element that endears the character to you more. That it did come out of nowhere. But if she's going to keep it around and it's going to be this consistent thing that we know about her, oh, we know that her favorite beverage is orange soda. And the fact that Dakota now knows that exemplifies to us that they are becoming friends and Dakota knows what her favorite drink is. I think that's cute. And so now next week I'll want to see Wendy Chu make an orange soda drink. Or you know what? If Dakota turns on her, if she smacks the orange soda out of her hand and we see it, if we see that orange fizzy goodness that'll just rot your teeth, spill out onto the floor. I mean, that'll be good enough for a slow-mo replay.
For sure.
I guess it kind of sounded sarcastic, but I was half serious.
Whatever. No,
I mean, like single tear will squirt out of the side of my face.
Who loves orange soda? I want to watch Good Burger. That's not Good Burger that's from. I happened to think about Good Burger, and anyway, that's where my brain's at tonight. It's been a long day. It's been a very long day. With all of that said, Ryan, what else do you have for us tonight? What else do you have for us tonight?
I don't know if you know the answer to this, but when they do those Chase University skits, has anyone ever like amount to anything that was in the classroom, like anybody become like a somewhat known person, or are they just sort of like extras they hire off the street?
I don't know, actually, Tom. That's more of a you question.
Yeah, similar to the Thatcher. What did he call it? Thatch's Thatch Can.
Yes.
They are sure to only show us the backs of the heads. So it's probable that these are newer signees that are still training and like don't have their new names yet or aren't working level up yet or whatever. But the only one that they have given any focus to whatsoever is Bodie Hayward. He was slightly less conspicuous to begin with, but he was the only one that they were going out of their way to show. So it's unsurprising that he's become the one focal student. Who was the one that I always recognized? I think it was Von Wagner that I always recognized as being the person that they tried not to show his face. But now that we've all seen his face so much more, you can understand why, even in like, you know, a 1/8, you know, angle profile, I could still recognize like, oh, that's good old Cal Bloom there. I see the brow sticking out into the mat. So, you know,
I think his eyebrows and Brock Lesnar's eyebrows need to have a fight.
I've definitely spent some time like zooming in on my phone and just staring at them to try to figure out how that cranium works.
Ryan, anything else for us?
That was all I had for you. Besides, there is an FYE up the road from me about probably an hour or so, and I haven't made it up there for a long time, but I really would like to see what's in there.
Yeah, I always liked walking around. There's I think it's Newbury Comics. I'm not sure if Newbury Comics is like a local thing to like New England or not, but that's kind of like what replaced all of the FYEs around me.
Well, I can tell you that they still have overpriced physical media.
Yeah. Actually, I found a store that actually was nothing but vinyl. It was all like old vinyl. They didn't sell anything else. It's kind of cool.
FYE does have a section for that now. I think, did I even see one when I was walking? Yeah, Target has a section for that now. It's like, it's a hip thing. I mean, obviously, it's remained a hip thing, but I think it's mainstream hip now to have a vinyl collection.
All right. Thank you very much, Ryan, as always. We're now going to go over to... We were trying to figure out who this was before we went on air, but I don't want to screw it up.
I can't deal with this tonight.
I think it's
Reverend
that?
Keith. It's
That's
Reverend
what
Keith.
I thought. That's what we were saying. I think it's Reverend Keith. Reverend Keith, how are you doing tonight?
I'm fine, gentlemen. How are you?
Not too bad. Other than being confused about the main event. That's all I can say.
I wanted to shed a light on that as well. But first, I want to say this to Tom Stout. Tom, listen, I am impressed with the fact that you pull no punches in your disdain of AEW going to the blood and guts, the carelessness, the high spots, and the like. I commend you for speaking your mind because I feel the same way, that wrestling has come so far since the days when the guys were blading every night, whether they were at the house shows, whether it was on TV, and I feel that so much of that is unnecessary nowadays. And in addition to all of the treacherous spots that the guys like Darby Allin, Sammy Guevara, and Cody Rhodes himself, when he was in AEW, were doing. So I commend you for speaking against what AEW is doing, and hopefully one day they'll stop, because many of lives have been lost because of that, you know, over the years. You know, a lot of those guys would still be around if they hadn't suffered all the CTE and, various other mental illnesses that led to their deaths. You know, so keep speaking out, Tom. I appreciate you.
Well, thank you so much, Keith. It really, really means a lot, especially coming from you and you know, in some of your spots on other Torch Audio. You have spoken so intelligently on important subjects, and yours is a voice that I respect as well. So I that means a lot coming from you. And yeah, it's not something that I want to make my soapbox. It's not something that I want to make my stump. But when I see it to the level that we've been seeing it, it's something that I can't not speak up about. And there are, I try to be careful. There are names that I've invoked, lines that I may have crossed, depending on what perspective somebody's coming from. And so then I worry, like, oh no, did I not measure myself enough on this one? Did I say something in a way that I maybe shouldn't have? But I have gotten some other good responses from the voice criticism, so which is good to hear, and heard from some with other views as well. The emailer Zach from Texas, who sparked the conversation last night with Wade, followed up with me on Twitter, and we had what I felt was a healthy back and forth, not the usual Twitter sniping or whatever you want to call it that you see on social media all the time. I thought we had a good back and forth, sharing our opposing views and why we felt that way, and eventually finding a little bit of common ground in the end on some things that we agreed on that in the end might be the solution to the issues that we have with both sides of it, where we're coming from it on. But yeah, it's just the kind of thing where I know I always end up summing it up by saying, like, well, this is on top of all the smaller issues I have with it, this is the reason why I will not support the product. And that's just like you're saying, that this sort of thing can be a very accumulative issue. Somebody who lands on their head today isn't going to, you know, suffer the worst effects of it tomorrow. It's something where we won't know the end result for 10, 15 years from now. And I would absolutely hate to see what I'm seeing, decide to engage with the product anyway, and then feel like I have contributed to the downfall of wrestlers that we end up seeing the downfall of. And of course, I hope it's one of those things that, like, I hope I'm wrong. I hope there are things that I don't know. I hope that there is less, I hope that painkillers aren't as prevalent as they were, you know, because there are even people that suffered less from the CTE issues that we've seen than go on to have painkiller addictions. And now I'm risking going down a tangent, but yeah, thank you. I wasn't even, there was part of me that was even hoping that it wasn't going to come up on tonight's show since I talked about it on Sunday and Monday, but you know, it is the main thing that people are taking away from my appearances on Torch Audio over the past couple days. And so I appreciate your words, and I appreciate the invitation to sort of put a cap on it for now as well.
Thank you, Tom, and keep doing what you're doing. Now, bringing it forward to tonight's episode, I saw bits and pieces of it. I'm going to go back and watch it in its entirety shortly. I did like the Breaker-Robert Roode match, and it was so good to hear Glorious once again. Yes. Now, I'm with you two, and then I'm going to let you digest these comments, and then I'm going to step aside for other callers. I didn't understand how they could have written that main event. Now, it was one of the more predictable matches in NXT history. However, what made it worse was the announcement at the conclusion that they're going to make it a fatal four-way tag title match next Saturday, Stand and Deliver. So my question to you guys is, Cora Jade in the women's title match with Mandy, or is she going to be teaming up, I take it, again with Raquel?
That's kind of the question. Like, when they said fatal four-way, I was like, I'm assuming it's Cora Jade, simply partly because she came out, but partly because she's kind of been in, she's been in that mix anyway. But
right.
Then also then also, you know, it was, I figured, was it last week or the week before, she stole the titles and hid them all over the place. And, you know, but she also stole Mandy's title too. It wasn't just the tag titles. That's right. I was just thinking she stole the tag titles from up there. But it was extremely confusing. I don't know why they thought this was a good idea, at least to pull it off this way. I feel like they should have let this lie for tonight, you know, and let us digest it for the week. And then if they wanted to do something like this, find a cohesive way to do it next week. I mean, I probably still wouldn't necessarily like it, but this just was really strange. They should not have the authority to change the stipulation. That's never, historically, it's never been anything that they've done with the Dusty Classic. It's always been, you know, a tag title shot. And even that was not even necessarily a guaranteed thing. I think a couple times in the Dusty Classic, it was kind of implied, but they never even actually said for sure, like, this will guarantee you a title shot against tag champs. We talked a little bit about it earlier as well, but Tom, is there any more that you might be able to make sense of at all of this?
Well, far be it from me to try to make sense of Cora's bizarre little storyline last week, but she stole the tag championship so then she could lure JC and Gigi into traps so then she could get Mandy to herself and not have the other toxics. None of the shortened ways I wanted to say that sounded good in my head. So I don't know, without having the cronies defending Mandy. And of course it didn't end up going her way, but that was the idea there. So she's been targeting Mandy as we sussed out a couple weeks ago when we were thinking about what in the world kind of match could Mandy actually end up having at Stand and Deliver, and we ruled out Io and Kaylee for obvious reasons. So they did officially announce Mandy versus Cora last week, so we knew that that was on the table. So when Kaylee and Io so nonsensically but say that they're making it a fatal four-way, yes, Cora is the other one, and that's why Cora went and stood out there, and that's why it makes even less sense that Cora's just cool with it, apparently, that now it's going to be harder to win that match. And, you know, we try to answer the question of why would they have done this, and part of me wants to say that, just for the sake of something to say, part of me wants to say, oh, well, maybe Cora and Mandy just weren't getting it together when they were, maybe there was a lack of faith that Cora and Mandy could put on a decent match and we needed the veterans to get in there. But honestly, I feel that Cora and Mandy are perfectly capable of having a good match with each other, and I would be very interested in seeing that. And so I kind of feel like this was probably the plan all along, and less of a diversion at the last minute. And I don't know if there was any element of last minute-ness to it, then I would think maybe it's to try to increase ticket sales by juicing up matches more, like, oh, now there are even more stars involved. And obviously this makes way for something else on the card. Like, I don't think we would have predicted LA Knight versus Gunter being on the card, but here it is. Nothing from the Mysterios tonight. Yeah, the Mysterios and Nikita Lyons and Lash Legend were the conspicuous absences by my estimation.
Right.
I expected more from the Mysterios and Escobar. So Escobar like showed up briefly, but yeah. So I don't know. That's me trying to make sense of it anyway.
That's okay. But I think that the NXT Stand and Deliver card is shaping up to be quite a good one. I mean, I'm sure we'll have a few surprises here and there, and I do expect to see some call-ups immediately following Stand and Deliver, such as Legado. They are definitely overdue for a call-up to the main roster. I think all four of them would do quite well on either Raw or SmackDown. And depending on whether or not Braun gets the title back from Dolph, he may be fast-tracked. But I think it would serve him better to stay in NXT, at least until early to midsummer, you know. So we'll see where that goes. Once again, Tom, Nate, thank you for taking my call. Keep up the good work, and we'll speak soon. God bless.
Thanks, all right. Keith, thank you very much, as always, man. Braun Breaker, he is somebody that I'm right there with you. I think he'd benefit from staying in NXT until, like, my thought was kind of like SummerSlam, you know, that time. Call him up then, not necessarily now. You know, it's, you know, not necessarily, what is it? SummerSlam's like not quite 6 months away, but give or take 6 months away. It gives him a little bit more time to grow and you know, flesh out his character, work on those promo skills a little bit. His in-ring work, as far as I'm concerned, is he's ready to go. But it's just kind of these little tiny things that I think he would benefit from, you know, by staying in NXT for a little bit longer. I don't know if I'm not sure I'm in favor of winning the title back either. I think that's the direction they're going to go. I'm not like not in favor of it either. But Tom, you've got me kind of like fantasy booking like a summer of Dolph Ziggler and having some crazy title matches, you know, and I want that more and more, but I don't think that's the direction that they're going to be going here. If they do, I'll be pleasantly surprised, but is there anything you want to touch on?
I forgot to check if Dolph had side plates on his belt this week, because that was the big tip off for me last week that I might be wrong in.
Okay. We're going to do. Here's what we're going to do. I have it DVR'd. So why don't you go ahead and read Kevin's email, and I'm going to go hunting for
side. Okay, cool. And I'll just say briefly that since we're there, the Rude versus Breaker match was good, but it was one of two examples on the show, I felt, of somebody taking too long to beat someone who doesn't really mean anything right now, and you know, someone in Breaker's position should not have taken that long to beat Robert Rude. All due respect to Robert Rude, because even though that was something that I felt was an important element of what we were seeing and something that should have been maybe considered a bit more, my main takeaway from the match was just hopefully that this is fun and rewarding for Bobby Roode, who has indeed been a very unimportant character for several years now. But going back to his TNA days, the Orlando crowd, like so many people that go to the NXT events, are the same people who went to the Impact Zone events at Universal Studios when Bobby Roode was part of that company. I don't think they were in the Impact Zone during his championship runs, but he had quite a stint there. So there are a lot of people who like him. Of course, he's getting to use the glorious entrance again. And even though I have my nitpick with it that I do, he gets to have the time to wrestle the match that he wrestled against another, you know, a promising star that he can mentor, at least to the extent that we're seeing. So I hope that he's having a good time with that and relishing it while he can.
That's actually like exactly what I said in the hits and misses as well. I'm just hoping I'm hoping he's having fun, because this is the most relevant he's been in a while.
Yeah. Oh, and they mentioned, Dolph mentioned finally that he's a former NXT champion. They have consciously avoided saying that. So exactly.
You just said,
pronouns, pal.
No, you said Dolph. No. You said Dolph.
Oh, I did. Okay, well. anyway, Kevin Catani emails us and says, you guessed it, salutations, gents. Firstly, I need to apologize to Tom, because as soon as I hit send on last week's email, I realized that he guest starred on Wrestling Night in America, not the Raw post show. Pardon my lapse in attention. Kevin, I had been on the Raw post show recently enough that I didn't even think of it. Honestly, I don't know where this month went. I mean, I guess that's what happens as we get older and when the days run together. And I've been so incredibly busy lately, so that probably contributes. But when Wade invited me to be on last night, my first thought was, already again? Like, I thought I had just been on, and that, like, maybe Wade forgot to, like, cross me off on his list or something. But, yeah, no, anyway, Kevin continues, that said, can we please share a collective wince at the state of Gunter and Duke's chests? Jeez, that was gnarly. What are your thoughts on the upcoming North American Championship ladder match? I was fortunate enough to view the first one live in New Orleans a few years ago. I personally think this one has some real potential to be in contention for a match of the night. Finally, I was listening to you all wax on Wrestling Night in America from Sunday, specifically on the Briscoes, and it got me wondering, have there been any Velveteen Dream sightings lately? Speaking of second chances, do you think he'll get one anytime soon? Thanks as always. Go VIP and listen to 8 years back. Office hours are now over. The Professor, Kevin P. Catani, PhD. And I'll mention before I forget, in case anyone hadn't heard me plug it yet, the most recent episode of NXT 8 years back, a VIP podcast, is free on Apple Podcasts. So you can sample the show that Kelly and I have a blast doing every single week, talking about NXT from 8 years ago, and talking a little movies as well. This week we're talking about John Carpenter's Escape films, and talking about Rob Gronkowski being in the crowd, talking about spotting Dana Brooke as part of the show for the first time, and so on. The North American Championship ladder match. I don't know. I feel like I've seen so many of these that we have seen so many of these that it's hard to get too excited for them. And I don't recall being particularly impressed with the last one. I think I remember it feeling too spot festy.
I think that was kind of all, like, the general consensus from all of us, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. So I guess I can say that I'm looking forward to the bell to bell of this one more just because we're getting fresher blood in it. I mean, the only reason I feel this way about Strong versus Sokoa is because they were put against one another, which didn't necessarily have to happen. But because Strong versus Sokoa was the choice we were presented with, I was really glad when Sokoa won, because we've just seen Roddy in that position for so long, and it's easy to believe that they would want him as an anchor in such a match. But I am more interested in seeing what Sokoa can do and seeing the newer blood. I agree with Kelly that it is Cameron Grimes to lose. And like, it was almost weird that A-Kid was still in the ring for the announcement of the second chance contention match next week, because so much of that focus is on Grimes. I almost hope for A-Kid's sake, even though I personally have yet to invest in him in any way. I kind of hope for his sake that he's taken out of the match in some kind of way that leads to something else, because they didn't do a fantastic job hyping him coming in, but he's coming in and already feeling like he's kind of just another guy. Like, no disrespect to Dante Chen, whom I've come to like quite a bit, but that's the other name coming to mind most immediately. Like, just another guy who comes out and wrestles well, but then loses and doesn't have much of a storyline. Too early to say, but that's how it feels right now. Based on our conversation about Jay Briscoe specifically, but the Briscoes being blackballed from AEW by Warner Media, and whether there could be any forthcoming second chances for Velveteen Dream, I stated on Wrestling Night in America my presiding general principle that human beings, unless it's a case of just like severe depravity, which, you know, use your imagination, human beings deserve second chances. What I failed to do on Wrestling Night in America was phrase it in a way I prefer to phrase it, which is human beings deserve to be given second chances by other human beings if they have shown that they have earned them, which is why someone like Hulk Hogan does not deserve a second chance just because he's showing up. because he has repeatedly failed to earn, to show that he's earned or has any interest in earning that second chance. So that is how I should have remembered to phrase that, because I feel that describes my view on these situations better. So should Velveteen Dream get a second chance, which isn't exactly how Kevin phrases the question, but should he? Yes, if he shows that he has earned one, which, I mean, he's been such a persona non grata that I don't think we've even heard anything one way or the other from him. I think the last time I ever heard anything about him was when he got booked on and then immediately canceled from an indie event. And prior to that, it was this big diatribe that he put up on Twitter or something explaining how he didn't actually have any, that he was actually the victim in the situation that took him down. No. See, I'm forgetting that they actually popped him up on TV every once in a while after that. So I guess the last time I saw him before that was that match against Adam Cole in the Fight Pit version of NXT that they were doing for a little while there with the chain link. So I don't know if this – I honestly don't know if I mean this as a joke or not, but right now it kind of feels like the most likely place we would end up seeing Velveteen Dream next is Control Your Narrative.
Yeah. You know, I didn't even think about that. I could see him turning up there. If I'm not mistaken, I remember reading something like maybe a month or two ago about him talking about before he got released, like they didn't want to let him go. So they were considering having him wrestle under a mask and just not talking. Who knows? Like, he was on some podcast or something like that. But I remember reading that on Reddit. I'm trying to find. Yeah, here it is. Now on this Dishing Drama podcast, Clark has made the audacious claim that WWE wanted him to compete under a mask, presumably to hide his identity. He's like, just so you know, WWE definitely wanted to consider bringing me in with a mask and having me not speak.
I guess this is, you know, to reference Hulk Hogan again, I guess this is when we queue up however many times Bruce Pritchard has talked about the Mr. America gimmick. Was that what it was called? When it was so obvious that it was Hogan?
Yeah.
And that was like, they were never trying to fool us. But, like, I don't think even Bruce Pritchard would think, I don't know, Brucey wasn't involved yet at that point, I guess. But I that just doesn't sound believable to me that anyone would actually think they could get away with that.
I know.
What is he going to do? Completely change his physique and wrestling style?
Right. I'm sure that maybe it was talked about, but I don't know how serious that would have actually been, you know, but yeah, anyway, and I'm with you. If somebody deserves a second chance, go ahead. You know, that's when they earn it. That's 100%. I don't know. And like, I haven't heard him come out and talk really about this, or if he has, like, it didn't make the waves, because I certainly don't remember hearing anything about it. And actually hearing in his words that, you know, he's remorseful, repentful, and maybe did something, some community service, whatever, to try and make up for it. It's now, granted, maybe he can't talk about it. I mean, maybe, you know, the allegations with the underage, I think it was underage boy and underage girl, were, you know, some, you know, hush hush thing, you know, legally he couldn't talk about it, you know, or can't talk about it, ongoing case or something. But I haven't heard him. I don't know. I don't think as of now he necessarily deserves it, but that's just on me knowing what I know. I don't know if he's come out and talked about it or spoke about it, but that's kind of that. As far as Dolph Ziggler's side plates, I did find a good screenshot here, and I even didn't even need to find it because, of course, Joel Pearl popped into my inbox, and I should have just looked at my inbox on Twitter first. But Dolph Ziggler does have side plates.
Okay. All right.
So
that's
I was actually pretty
new
surprised
this week.
To see that. Yeah. I wonder if he had him on Raw last night. I didn't notice. I did watch some of Raw last night. But
yeah, that, Wade and I didn't even really talk about that segment all that much. It was honestly, the segment just felt to me like a promo for NXT where they didn't actually explicitly mention NXT. Because really what they were leading to was the 5,000th time that someone has stolen Rey Mysterio's mask, this time being perhaps the least motivated of all of them. But
Logan Paul was a big fan growing up, so I'm going to steal a mask.
Oh, did they say that? Okay, I missed that.
Yeah, there was the Miz did like a little he did a backstage interview. I forget who interviewed him, but he was still holding up the mask in his hand, and he said, like, you know, apparently Logan Paul was a massive Rey Mysterio Jr. fan growing up, and he's stealing it for him, and he wants him to wear it on Monday on Raw to the ring. So that's that.
All right. Well, Dolph Ziggler retaining at Stand and Deliver. It's confirmed.
Yeah, it might. It might be. I mean, unless they're trying to throw us off here, but
unless they're trying to sell some side plates.
I was just thinking the same thing.
I don't know. I've still got my Shayna ones. I turned around to look at them as if this is a video podcast, which I never do those. But I hung it up behind me so it could show up on webcam.
Nice. I've got my big gold hanging right above my desk here. Got photographed quite a few times. I don't know if I've talked about it before, but anyway.
I think a little bit, yeah.
I know we've talked about it off air, and I know I've mentioned it on air, but like I don't know if I've mentioned like I got it signed. I got a pretty cool story out of Mick Foley too with it, but which I know I've told you guys off air, but regardless, maybe I'll tell you guys if anybody shows interest. If you want to hear it, let me know, and I'll tell it next week. But to keep moving on, we got some other stuff to talk about here. We kind of touched on mostly everything. The only few things, I guess, to clean up here. Let's start with the Creed Brothers versus the Grizzled Young Vets. We had Creed Brothers versus Grizzled Young Vets in a match tonight. It's kind of a whodunit type of thing. We're still trying to figure out who attacked the Creed Brothers last week. Or not last, was it last week? Week before? I think it was a couple weeks ago at this point.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember in what week did my brain file away the
I want to say it was 2 weeks
flipped
ago.
Over turtle leg motions they were doing.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure it was 2 weeks ago. It might have been last week. I think it was 2 weeks ago. Regardless, it was kind of a whodunit. Everybody's still trying to figure it out. The Grizzled Young Vets were had the finger pointed at them, and they were trying to deny it and basically clear their name in this match here. Creed Brothers handily took care of the Grizzled Young Vets, and then after we saw two men in hoodies kind of trashing the Diamond Mine locker room. We saw them from behind, just couldn't necessarily see who they were. I have my theories, but with kind of the thought, I think a lot of people is potentially MSK, is it potentially Imperium? I'm leaning more towards Imperium. I went back a couple times and I was trying to look at the hands, right, and try to like see the color of people's hands, because that's really the only skin that you could see, right? And they showed this footage. They cut back to the ring for a little bit and showed the Creed Brothers, and then immediately they cut to Imperium. So unfortunately, I couldn't do a screen grab because Windows 10's like, hey, if you do a screen grab of this, it's kind of copyright infringement. So, we can't let you screen grab like live TV, which is dumb. But I wanted to screen grab it and like actually look and go as far as to like look at the colors like in Photoshop and see how close they might be. I think it's Imperium. You could kind of see the color of the guy's hands in the far background of the shot in a few frames, and they both seemed white to me, and especially the guy in the front, very white and kind of almost like translucent, which also looked very much like Fabian Aichner. Martel Barcel. Sorry.
Nailed it.
Yep. In the next scene. So that's my thought. I'm not sure what you think, but who do you think done it? And anything else you got on this match?
So I will reference a 1973 film and say that I was looking at those hands in the background, and I don't think we saw the black hand side. So I don't think it's definitive, especially with the way the scene was lit. And you said you went back a couple times, so maybe you saw more than I did, but
They tried to do a really good job of hiding it, but there was a couple times where he was pouring out milk, where you could see the back of his hand, his left hand.
Gross.
And then there was another scene, a couple seconds later, I forget what he was doing with his right hand, but there was a few frames where you could actually see the back of his right hand. And to me, they did look Caucasian.
Okay. Also possible that they're stand-ins.
Certainly
honestly,
possible as well.
Totally possible that they did. And I didn't catch this, but Bruce Lee, PhD, Bruce Hazelwood, I should ask which he prefers. He'll come up with a new nickname if I ask him that. He mentioned on Twitter that there was a focus on the accents that the people have. And I didn't catch that myself. But if we remember the Ember Moon thing, I mean, she was using a voice modulator. So, I don't think anything's off the table. I think it's even possible that they used Imperium to film this segment just as part of trying to throw us off, again, with the immediate cut to an Imperium backstage segment where they were wearing similar clothing. And I want to say that's usually how Imperium dresses anyway, but it seemed like a deliberate choice tonight. Like let's put them in shirts that look similar to what the guys were wearing in that video. So I think it's possible that it could have been Fabian and Marcel, actually in the scene, like filming the scene, but then for the storyline, like that's just used to try to throw us off, and it's actually MSK, because why would you go to the length of building all this intrigue if it wasn't going to be a consequential payoff like MSK turning heel? And if they do that, then I would say likely winning the titles. If it's just, oh yeah, it's what you thought all along, it's Imperium, then what was the point? I feel like that's a really dead payoff. So I think that's the biggest reason why it kind of needs to be an MSK here and why it is them. As for the match, I mean, you know, it's grizzled young veterans in the Creed, so the match was fine. I'm glad that they seem to have, I didn't even think about it until it passed through my mind tonight, they seem to have dropped the whole Zach Gibson is trying to cheat James Drake, trying to teach James Drake how to cheat better, which, I mean, that's just merciful. They were trying to give him something, and I've defended that. It's the whole reason why I'm fine with the Butch renaming, because it's like, hey, they were trying to give him something. You know, Pete Dunne is like, what you see is what you get. They were trying to give him some flavor here, so he pops off the screen a little bit more. And if this is how he gets his chance, then great. But that, for the Grizzled Young Veterans, was not it. They were only... And for all I know, Malcolm Bivens has been working this all week on Twitter, but they were only just randomly thrown out there as possible assailants in a brief backstage segment last week. So this wasn't really set up, but the fact that they had just been beaten and were still in the arena when the video came on the screen seemed like pretty good evidence, you know, okay, it's not them. So the point of the match was for the Creeds to get their revenge on their prime suspects. I don't know how they decided that they were the prime suspects, but they did. And then the match ended with them being cleared of suspicion. So it told a story. I'm okay with it.
But Rikishi really did drive the car that hit Stone Cold, though, right?
Yes, 100%. Okay. That was really...
He did it for the people.
I did it earlier too. I was trying to think of his legitimate name, and I couldn't do it, so I tried to move on awkwardly. I know it's something Fatu.
Oh God, yeah. Now I'm blank. I know it's in the back of my brain.
I actually did not know this. It's Solofa.
I actually did know that. I did know that. I knew it began with an S. I'm sitting here trying to think of it, and yeah, I was just surprised I remembered how to pronounce Anoa'i earlier. Let's see what else. Actually, I want to talk about Electra Lopez and Fallon Henley, which kind of
I guess we have to, don't we?
We kind of do, and that also kind of plays into the whole Indy Hartwell. No, it doesn't. That was the Loomis and D'Angelo match, so never mind. But let's talk about Electra Lopez and Fallon Henley. We saw the two of them wrestle tonight. Match didn't necessarily blow me away. I think the standout for me in the match was actually Fallon Henley. Didn't necessarily wow me 100%, but I liked her drive and just her charisma here in the match. There was a spot where I can't remember. I think it was a shoulder tackle, and I think she pulled the shoulder tackle off well. And Lopez her cell was not. She wasn't there for it. It looked like a very awkward collision. So it was a couple messy spots in the match, but as somebody that has been starting to follow Fallon Henley. Especially on, hey, here's a plug for you on your VIP podcast, Breaking Point. What did you think of the matchup between Lopez and Henley?
So I did kind of look at this in that manner, and Lopez has wrestled on Level Up already. She wrestled Saray and she won. And I called it, well, at least in my notes, and maybe I brought it up on the podcast, I called it her best match yet because she had a decent opponent in there with her. But she's still starting from a very low floor, and we saw that again in this match where Fallon Henley, for her part, who finally was officially announced. I mean, she's been signed for a while, but she was officially announced as part of the new the latest class of signees, Performance Center class. Kayla Inlay was as well. I was questioning whether or not she had been signed. I wasn't certain. So Kayla Inlay's in there as well. Roxy being the would say the head of the class. She's listed further down. I guess if I looked at it again, maybe they did it alphabetically. I would have to. No, I don't think they did. Anyway, I'll ponder that later. Fallon Henley has not impressed me to an extreme level in the ring, but certainly more consummate than, like, she's someone who, even if she never improved, you could use her at this level moving forward. Lopez seems like someone that they like, and not everything is in ring. And I'll be, it's as much as I enjoy the bonus point perspective that I take, it's also kind of funny to me that I wanted to do that because so much of what I enjoy in wrestling isn't the actual wrestling part of it. But I like seeing the people build the proper foundations. And Lopez, you see her thinking between her spots. Even when she's set up for something, she still kind of has to pause. And I feel like there was a moment with the finish where Fallon Henley was kind of like, you're burying me a little bit here. I'm still waiting for you to hit me with the finish. I got in position for you. And, it's just a split second. And not everything has to be lightning speed, but it still is that little moment of like, okay, you going to hit the move now? Because now it just looks like I'm standing here with my head between your legs for no reason. The main point in the match that stood out to me, what is it called? See, this is why I've actually seriously thought this. This is why I should buy another wrestling game is so I can remind myself what certain moves are called when I go through the character creator. Because I've forgotten, I want to call the hold that she did a surfboard stretch, but that's not what that is. Surfboard stretch is much more complex. But there was a pretty basic like knee to the center of the back while holding the arms hold that she did. And like she did one very basic thing, and you see her thinking about it. And then she's just like, oh, yeah, we did this in class the other day. Ah, here I am doing this hold now and looking at the hard cam. And it's just when you get that level out of someone that's on TV, it becomes so transparent when they win that it's like, oh, okay, she only won because that's what the script said. I don't believe that she's actually the better competitor. So, yeah, Lopez, unfortunately, is not someone that I have very high hopes for, which is not something I say lightly. I don't see people with like Nikita Lyons. I've trashed her here and there, and I still try to line all of that with like, but you know, if she shows us that she's working on it, then I'm optimistic that she can become something. And Electra Lopez, I think I think her match tonight was better than the match that we saw from Nikita. But I feel like I would rank Elektra lower because we've seen more from her at this point, and it has not improved. Tonight might have even been her worst match. I'd have to go back and watch all of them, which sounds like an unpleasant task. But yeah. So to finish off with something nice, on the other side of the ring, I did notice that they had Fallon Henley dressed up to fit Briggs and Jensen's characters more. So that's nice. I mean, you know, there was nothing wrong with her wrestling gear, but since that is the characterization they're rolling with, that she's buddies with them, she dressed up in that style tonight. So cool. There it shows that they're thinking about her.
Yeah, I noticed that too, and I actually like that little touch, just, you know, kind of give her more of a country type feel kind of to go with Briggs and Jensen. I actually called them the right name this time, Briggs and Jensen, and not Brooks and Jensen.
It cracked me up so much the other day when NXT, it was either the official account or the Level Up account, tweeted Brooks and Jensen, and then Brooks Jensen himself quote tweeted it like, "Oh, it's Briggs and Jensen, but you know you're trying," or whatever he said.
I thought that was great. I saw that too. That was fantastic.
But I still keep on writing it the wrong way anyway.
I know. Tonight, I wrote it correctly in the hits and misses and didn't have to, like, go back and edit it. I kind of echo a lot of what you said as well, especially about Electra Lopez tonight. I did kind of feel like it was almost like she went backwards. I'd have to go back and watch all of her matches too, but like I was not impressed. I felt like Fallon Henley felt like she knew what she was doing in the ring. Like she's the newbie, and if you know what to look for in this match, you can tell that she's the one that was kind of she knew she was the one that really kind of knew what she was doing. She had more of a better skill set in the ring, at least from my point of view anyway. From that match to Indy Hartwell, Persia Parada, Dexter Lumis, and Duke Hudson, and their whole weird thing that they've got going on, the which couple is cuter type of a deal, a friendly rivalry, I guess, between the best friends of Persia Parada and Indy Hartwell. So we saw Dexter Lumis first take on Tony D'Angelo, and we saw all three Persia Parada, Duke Hudson, and Indy Hartwell in the corner of Dexter Lumis. And it turned out that was not in his favor, as I didn't think it would be, when in the middle of the match, or towards the end of the match, rather, Tony D'Angelo went for the crowbar that he brought to the ring during his entrance. Indy Hartwell was able to snatch it out of the way, but for some reason, Persia Parada was like, "No, I want to snatch it out of your hands." And she like snatches it away from Indy Hartwell, which allowed Tony D'Angelo to get it. And when he went to rip it out of Persia Parada's hands, the momentum swung it right into Dexter Lumis's head, which, you know, that sounds deadly, but hey, whatever. It didn't kill Joe Pesci in Home Alone, I guess, so whatever. I didn't think I was going to make a Joe Pesci reference on the show tonight. I guess I didn't think we were going to start the show singing William Regal's Man song either, but hey, here we are. They hit him in the head. It hit him in the hit Dexter Lumis in the head, and conveniently, the referee also did not see that. So it allowed Tony D'Angelo to get the quick win. Afterwards, we saw backstage Indy Hartwell, Dexter Lumis, Tony, Duke Hudson, and Persia Parada all backstage, kind of still bickering about what happened in this match. When Dexter Lumis very quickly drew a caricature of Gunther, essentially challenging Duke Hudson to try and take on Gunther if he seems like he's so tough, if you will, which actually led to Gunther versus, I told myself tonight I was going to still call him Walter because the Gunther thing's just weird. I miss Walter. But it turned out to be Gunther versus Duke Hudson in a match with Gunther going over, which then led to who came out after it was LA Knight. It was LA Knight comes out after Gunther wins, which ends up leading into a match between Gunther and LA Knight next week. There were a lot of moving pieces to that puzzle that I just described there. So, Tom, do you have anything to say about all of that? And we can kind of digest it from there.
I liked the connected story throughout the night. I always appreciate that kind of thing. I know you do as well. And Indy and Persia certainly didn't answer any of our questions tonight as to, I don't think they intend to at this point. I think that part of the story is already told as to why they're suddenly being so petty with one another. I know we understand the ingredients of why, but I don't think we really know why they're worried about getting more views on the videos of their kisses or why Persia wanted to hold the crowbar instead. I like though that they're still spending time with each other. It's the frenemy thing. They don't just suddenly hate each other and don't hang out anymore. They're hanging out with each other, but they're feuding. And last week when they, you know, both came out to their mutual entrance, I thought that was cute. So I am amused by this. And Indy's acting could sell me on the humor of just about anything, even, you know, no matter how nonsensical it is. But Lumis and Tony D, it's not that we haven't seen two high concept characters go up against one another, but Lumis and Tony are like so high concept that seeing them across the ring from one another was almost jarring. I was like, oh, I don't. Like, usually you put them in there with somebody that can at least play a more of a regular human being on the opposite side of the ring. But this was the other example for me of something where somebody should not have taken as long to beat their opponent as they did. And that's no intended disrespect to Dexter Lumis, who we've covered our, you know, coming around on him and why we now like him. It's just, you know, he's just not there right now. He's not the one with the stand and deliver match against Tommaso Ciampa, which is likely going to be Ciampa's, you know, farewell from NXT. And so you would think that Ciampa would also be doing the honors in that match. So you've got Tony taking as long as he did to defeat Dexter, and he needed a weapon to do it. So unless they're trying to get the crowbar over almost more than they're trying to get Tony himself over, I don't know. Like, maybe he uses the crowbar to beat Ciampa, and that's what they're trying to establish. But I don't know if that's what you want in this situation. Like, they've kind of got me now, just from a fan perspective, going, you know what? Tony just doesn't belong in this match. Let Ciampa beat him and go out on a win. Which is not really a I don't think I would recommend that path, you know, in an objective sense. But just looking at it as a fan and somebody who has seen plenty of positives in Tony D'Angelo as well. But it's just like, I just don't feel like he fits where he's at right now. So there's that. Then there's the deleted scene of the conversation or the staring contest that Gunther and Dexter apparently had to set this up. I would have wanted to see that for sure. Or maybe that didn't happen and like an NXT page had to go inform, like with their knees knocking, they had to go to Imperium's locker room and say like, the weird guy drew a picture of you, so you've got to wrestle Duke Hudson now and try to make sense of that. And then that match was what it was. You know, it was fine. And I like that Gunther got some mic time to, again, as he did last week, talk about himself in a championship context. Because I have said that on top of Ziggler retaining the championship at Stand and Deliver, he should then drop it to Gunther a little bit down the road. And Gunther's already talking about himself that way. So it's not as soon as I would have been doing it. But that's where we are. So thumbs up there. And LA Knight. Is there anything I missed on what I wanted to say? I don't know. Probably not. Yeah. No, I think that covers all of that.
And the mute button wins again. All right. So I think that is going to take us to the end of our show. Like I said, I am Nate Lindberg, and you can follow me on social media at Nate Lindberg. I write the NXT hits and misses, as well as occasionally host this show when Kelly decides he's too good for us. Follow me on Twitter. And if you like or have any interest in role-playing games and ways you can use them in a therapeutic way, follow me over at Deej Time. That's DEGETIME on Twitter and YouTube. Tom, who are you?
I am at Tom Staup, and you've heard of Steiner Math. We've now heard of Nady Math. Now you can hear of Staup Math when you tune into Willing Creatures on Saturdays and hear me try to add up all of my sneak attack dice. Hadn't plugged Willing Creatures in a while, so there we go. That'll be a fun plug when we get to the one shot that I very spontaneously joined recently. I had about 20 minutes to slap together a character, and he ended up being a horny demon. So I did that for a few hours, and it got recorded. Speedwayvideo.org is where I'm posting my race videos. There's a lot of exciting stuff going up right there. There's the free episode of NXT 8 Years Back on Apple Podcasts, and the March episode of Bonus Point will be recorded in a few days and going up on Torch VIP. And finally, just because so many of you wanted to ask me on Twitter, that was Sophia Cromwell.
Okay. That was Sophia Cromwell. Anyway, we'll see you guys next week. Take care.